Alrighty. Good to be back. Sleepy time of the day. Everyone ready? That's good. All right, I'm going to do one more on leading yourself, and then we're going to kick into leading others, then we may dip back into leading yourself, depending on timing, that sort of thing. But I want to get to the sharp end of some of the stuff. But the one I want to look at now is Own It. There's a great book also called Extreme Ownership out there by Jocko Willink. He's a Navy SEAL guy, and Leif Babin, I think, is the other guy. It's great listening to an audiobook because, you know, he sounds like a Navy SEAL. As I was going into Ramadi. It's tops. But the principle of Own It, I think, is it flows out of the drivenness idea, but it's absolutely essential, and it's the idea that leaders are to intensely own their world. So if you have responsibility over something, oversight over something, then you own it fully, completely. Now, not in that possessive territorial sense, but in the sense of I take complete responsibility for this thing, whatever it might be. Because the reality is that leaders are always responsible. The trick is to recognize I am absolutely responsible and take complete responsibility, which means I own mistakes, I own problems in my area, I own difficulties and when things are going wrong. Now, I sit in my place in the church that I'm at, looking after, I'll just do maturity for the moment, I sit looking after maturity, and I have a few staff under me who look after up to seven community leaders each, coaches each, who each then look after five, we call them growth group leaders, but what do you call them? Community group leaders. Community group leaders. Everyone can read that, I'm sure. If something happens down in one of these groups, multiple tiers away from me, I want to think I am responsible for what's going on down there. Now, I have no direct contact with the people in that group and what's going on in the leadership situation that's going on there. But what I want to do, I'm not saying I always do it, but what I want to do is I want to think I take complete responsibility for what's going on down there. I own it. And what I'm going to do is then start thinking about how have I contributed or failed to contribute to this problem. Now, there might be nothing you could have done. There might be no way that you could have foreseen the circumstances that have taken place or whatever it might be. But more often than not, what you actually find is there's a culture problem. There's a vision problem. There's a system problem. There's some sort of problem that I may have contributed to or that I can learn something from in order to do things better in my sphere of leadership so that I'm supporting, protecting, training the people under me so that they're doing so that it flows down. And now, it doesn't matter where, that's just to illustrate, it doesn't matter where you sit or how far you sit from the, I want to take complete responsibility for what is in under my care. So if you're a growth group leader, it's very easy to, or a team leader, it's very easy to jump to blaming others, blaming the circumstance, blaming the leader over you, blaming the leader under you. There's lots of people we can blame, but I want my first thought to be I take full responsibility. And when I review it, even if I have contributed in no way to this situation, I want to take full responsibility to fix the situation. Even if I fix the situation through others, I don't directly jump in and fix it. I run through the appropriate structures. I want to take responsibility to fix it. That is my first port of call. How have I contributed to this? Now, that can sound like a very heavy burden. Can't it? But I think that taps in again into the gospel. I know that in Christ, my identity is in Him. I'm loved. I'm secure. I can face failures or things that I haven't done well because of that. It's also in relational circumstances. You think about a relationship, and there's someone comes to you and they yell at you and they're angry and they tell you all the things, the bad things. And has anyone ever had that? Yeah. Now, your first thought can be, you know, like, it's you. You're the problem. I've done nothing here. This is not. And that may be the case, but I want my first thought to be, I want to listen to what you're saying, and I want to take responsibility to the effect of, I want to think about, have I contributed anything to this? Have I done anything wrong? And I tell you, it's almost always the case where there's at least a grain of truth in what people say to you. At least something you can take away. Now, sometimes there's not. Sometimes they've just gone off their mind, you know, and there's nothing that you have done. But more often than not, there's things that you can learn from what the other person has said. So I think that's a great place to start. I own it. I take responsibility. If it's failing, I try to work out, have I contributed anything, and I take responsibility to fix it. Now, any thoughts at that point? That's a good question. It's a good question. Because you've got multiple priorities in life, which are important, and they'll always be in tension. We haven't talked about balance. I think balance is not necessarily a biblical framework. I actually think we need to be unbalanced towards the work of the kingdom. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean time-wise, but just heart-wise. But there will be tension. There'll always be tension between our competing priorities. And so you have to work out under God how much and what level of responsibility, how much time, energy you are able to contribute to ministry, structured ministry work. But hopefully, at the beginning, it's clear what the parameters are, like, especially if you've, I don't know if you write role descriptions, do you do any of that sort of stuff? No. That's a possible thing you can do, is write. It's weird when you're smaller, but as you grow bigger, you start to realise, we actually need to write role descriptions for our different volunteer roles around the place. So I know what I'm getting myself into when I sign up, because that's when it gets really tricky, is you're asking me to take responsibility for something that I actually didn't know that's what I was signing on the dotted line. I actually didn't realise I was writing a blank check when I wrote that. So clear, it's been clear on the entry in, yes, I will take responsibility for that, and then I take responsibility for that. Always recognising that there's too much pressure on me, I'm not coping with this, I'm going to talk to the person who's leading me, and hopefully there's understanding and negotiation working out. Does that make sense? Did that go where you were to some extent? Okay.
Can you also talk about, so as leaders, sometimes it can feel that you're the only one who does own it, and there are people in your team who ought to own it but don't own it, responsibility, and therefore sometimes you'll try and be the saviour and fix it all, then sometimes that disempowers. Is that a good question?
I'll come back to empowering, but yeah, I totally. What you're trying to do is each leader is trying to create a sphere of safety and empowering under which others work. So while I retain full responsibility at this level, I'm trying to pass on responsibility. So it's like a virus that trickles down, you know, through the system, so that it's not like I give you responsibility and I step away. I retain it, you retain it, you retain it. But yeah, part of empowering is trying to help others take on that responsibility for their part as you move down through the organisation. Yeah, Frank.
You say the responsibility is commensurate with authority. People feel to take on responsible action because they maybe not perceived to be authorized to do so.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, you need those things to match, don't you? Authority and responsibility, which again is part of empowering. If you given responsibility, but someone doesn't give you the authority to actually do the things you need to do, that's a very frustrating environment to be working with. Let's flip to some team stuff now and have a think about that. And we might flip back to some stuff, because one of the interesting things about leading others is doing the competency stuff of leading teams is so intertwined with who you are as a person. Because leadership, the only vehicle you have to lead is through you. And so it matters who you are in terms of the leadership. So you've got to keep thinking about yourself as the leader, which is why discipleship and leadership fit hand in glove, because who you are needs to be a disciple walking closely with Jesus. So one of the wonderful and terrible things about leadership is it keeps showing you who you are. It shows you all the worst things about yourself, which is a terrible thing, but a wonderful thing, because it gives great opportunity for Jesus to change you. So embrace it. Love leading. Get into it and see all the things that it points out about yourself so that you can move on in growth, which is great. Now teams. So rosters to teams. Now, you've probably all got thoughts on this. What often happens in churches around the place is we devolve to rosters, or that's just the culture that's always been. I think particularly in evangelical churches, my experience of evangelical is Anglican churches in Sydney and FIEC churches. But rosters tends to be the fallback. And so what we tend to become as leaders of teams is basically the person who does one of the slots on the roster and the person who pulls together the roster so the other people can do the slots on the roster. And we never meet together or really necessarily even see each other. We just turn up on our week and I do mine and you do yours and you do yours. And and the main responsibility we feel is if someone didn't turn up on their week on the roster, then they're in trouble. And I'm going to tell them they're in trouble or gently encourage them to make sure that they come the next time round on the roster. Teams use rosters or don't. That's irrelevant, but are actually fundamentally different than rosters. Now, I don't need to say much more, but we'll unpack. But the concept of a sporting team is a really helpful one, what Toby was sharing before. You think about a sporting team, and a sporting team thinks, we've got a mission. We've got a goal. We've got something we want to achieve. How are we going to achieve that? Well, we've got to get together, talk together, plan together, train together. We've got to have team camaraderie. We've got to have vision of where we're going to go. We've got to, all those things. It's a fundamentally different concept. Now, I know lots of you do teams in your working life and around the place. But in church, it's having that sense of the first key thing is actually meeting together. Now, it is astounding. It is astounding how many churches you go to and the teams don't meet. It's absolutely fundamental, and yet the teams never get together. Now, this is not trying to berate you if you don't get your teams together, but that is absolutely fundamental. You can't function as a team if you never get together, which then makes you go, well, the meetings have got to be good. If the meetings suck, that's counterproductive. You've got to then work out how to have good meetings that actually achieve real things and you're not just getting together for the sake of getting together. So that's another thought. But team has to actually get together. So that's one key thing. Another thing is they need to understand the vision or the purpose or the... So you guys have a whole church vision or purpose or... I don't mind the language that's used. Sometimes people differentiate between mission and vision and purpose and values. Yeah, and they are different things. But yeah, a big goal, a big vision I quite like because you can see it. You can see what the future would look like when you hear a vision. But then each section of church, MAG, membership, maturity, will have that vision, but also a subset, how they contribute to that vision. What is our part that seeks to achieve that? So we want to see 1,000 people around your area in church. Maturity contributes to that by, and then they understand their vision. And then part of maturity is community groups. Is that right? Is community groups. A significant part, I'd imagine, of maturity is community. How do community groups contribute? So once you recognize in each sphere, how does the hosting team contribute to what's going on in membership, contribute to... Now, it doesn't have to be long, it doesn't have to be complex, but you need to be clear, what's the purpose? It's another language. What's the purpose of the whole? What's the purpose of membership that we're trying to achieve, how does hosting contribute to that purpose? So that now we know what the game that we're playing as a team is. Now we know exactly where we're heading. And one of the things about vision is it leaks. I think that's a Bill Hybels phrase. Vision leaks. So you need it often. You need it regularly because it keeps you like you've got little holes in you. And vision keeps running out. So you've got to keep topping up. So your team, every time they get together, each time you're talking, not every time, but often when you're talking individually to people, you're just keeping chatting about the vision, informally, formally, a Bible passage that contributes to it, however you do it. So, and from the top, you need visioning, which we've had some today, I imagine over this weekend. And so you need visioning. So there's a couple of things, meeting together, vision. That's great. So there's something really relational about a team. Partially the vision helps to see you know where you're going. So that brings a camaraderie, particularly as you get together and do stuff together. But especially if you're trying to build that by we're gonna eat, we're gonna hang out, we're gonna laugh, we're gonna enjoy time together. You start to develop that camaraderie, and doing the work together side by side actually builds the camaraderie as well. So you might choose to use rosters, you've got to use rosters in some ministries because they're a helpful tool, but you may even choose to roster in such a way that people are together, not the whole team, but parts. You can't always achieve that. Depends on the ministry. There's a great variety amongst us of ministries. But as much as possible, it builds camaraderie as we do the work together. But so does, we'll talk more about this, when you're in meetings, solving things together. If meetings are just me telling you what to do, it's not really a meeting. Meetings are together doing things like, well, let's see the vision. Here's a very simple meeting. Let's see the vision. Where are we going? What's going well? Let's encourage each other. What's going well? What's going badly? What are the things that could be fixed or could be... Let's solve what's going badly by actually thinking together about those problems and how we might actually fix those problems. Well, let's pray. I don't know. That's a pretty simple meeting. Like, there's lots of other things you could probably do at the meeting. Do a bit of training. There's lots of other things you could do. But very basically, are we actually achieving our purpose? Are we actually kicking our goals and hitting things? Or are we not? Why not? How can we solve it together? Because the very process of actually solving it together can be a scary thing for the leader to open up to, but is actually the powerful moment where everyone is in, because I own this ministry. I contributed to designing it. I actually shared how to. Now, there are certain parameters at different levels of an organisation as to what you can change and what you can't change. You might be a community group leader and you may not be able to say, the way we're going to do church this weekend is... Yeah, so there's different parameters within a framework within which we work at each level. But still, the concept of actually chatting together about how things are going, how we might improve things, is actually a very, very powerful experience and builds camaraderie, ownership, and gets people to be part of it. Now, that's fairly simple, but I think very powerful. Does anyone have more thoughts on that or comments or questions? It's pretty key to get alignment, actually, because that is another thing that you're looking at here is alignment in any team. You need churches to be aligned. You need each tier and level of ministry to be aligned, and you need within a team to be aligned. Now, it'll definitely be the case that you will have teams where people come on and they're not aligned. And so over time, it's trying to get alignment. Alignment often comes around this, so solving things together. So even in the process, as you're throwing stuff around, disagreeing with each other, hopefully you're shaping one another. If there's a fundamental difference in what the purpose of the team is, that's reasonably significant. So the leader needs to work in that situation to either draw people to an alignment around the agreed vision, or to take that person aside quietly and say, this is the purpose of this particular team. I hear what you're saying, but this is what this team exists for, that sort of thing. I don't know, what do others do in that circumstance? Yeah, that's a fairly fundamental one, but one that you will come across. You will come across people who have a different vision for what's going on in a community group, or a different vision for what's going on in a certain membership team. So yeah, it is something that will need to be dealt with.
Brian, can you maybe give an example of how that would play out in a team?
Yeah, I just think the fundamental thing is you got to meet. So the first thing I do is I go, whatever team it is, you'll have to work out the frequency of your meetings. And I'd be surprised if any team should meet less than once a quarter, would be my sense. And if your ministry doesn't warrant that, then maybe the ministry needs redesigning in some sort of way. So it feels like it's a significant enough ministry that it actually needs a meeting. So that you can discuss how it's going and where it could go next. So I think that's the first fundamental thing. So, and then I just put together an agenda for the meeting, and I'd use the meeting as the tool to get the rest happening. So I'd go, number one, we're just going to read a verse, and different people feel equipped in different ways. So some people will be able to do a lot with Bible, some people less, but I'd just pick one verse. I'd ask, Toby, can you give me one verse for my purpose? And we read it together, or one little passage, and we read it together, and that could be it. Or you could say something about it, or you could ask, does anyone want to say something about it? Or, but you basically give a brief vision, why we're doing what we're doing, what we're seeking to achieve. Doesn't need to be massive, doesn't need to be eloquent, just needs to be clear. But if you can get discussion around it, that's even more powerful. So I'd have that as point one on my agenda. And then I'd have as point two, exactly what I said, what's going well. I'd throw that around for a while. Point three, what's not going well. Point four, how are you going to fix it? Point five, pray. And then you can start to get creative. Next time around, we're going to read a chapter of Wisdom in Leadership and before we come and chat about it. Whoa, I've got training in there as well. Maybe I'm going to add, I don't know, you can think about the things that you want to add into your area. There might be some specific training for your area as well that you want to add in.
Practically, do you think it's more helpful having one person and multiple teams just to cover the work that needs to be done, or have one person and one quick team and be fully dedicated to that task? When I look at this and I hear a quarterly meeting, class serving, and then as a leader you always do more than everyone else, and if you have two or three teams, that is like another job, a family. But what's like your approach? Do you actually say to people, look, you're already in two teams, and if they say I want to go into another team, do you stop people, or do you even move people around in teams if you don't see their gifting in the right place?
Oh, this is very good. Very good. Yeah. It just shows the whole thing's complex because it's a system. It's a system of people. Church is actually quite a complex organization. And so every thing you choose to do has knock-on consequences to everyone else. And so, yeah, everyone go have meetings. And suddenly you're like, man, I've got multiple meetings, which I still think this is where we want to head. But as you start to feel the pain of it, you've got to keep escalating that up so that the people are aware in leadership that this is going on, then come up with solutions. And I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all solution. But I do think over time there's scaling issues. So I think over time you start small, and by nature, church plant, everyone does everything. Like you just got to have one person doing five jobs. It's the nature of the church plant. If you're going to get people coming, you have to staff a whole bunch of ministries. But as time goes on, hopefully you can pull people back so more and more people become specialised into one, maybe two areas is ideal. Now, you got to weigh these things up, because if you rush to meetings and it's going to cause all of you and all of your people to suddenly go, well, I'm only doing one ministry now, you might actually buy yourself more problems with rushing to everyone having. So there's got to be a staged approach to how you're going to manage this. And there are certain ministries which are, again, it's complex. There are certain ministries which you think that's a full ministry. That's a full load. Like, and I think more and more we do want to design ministries that feel like that, so people feel like, this is something I can really get my teeth into. I love being part of this. I'm on a team. We're really doing something big, rather than seven bitsy, yeah, little bits of ministries. I think that's probably the way to head long term. But the other thing is people have discretional energy. So I'm a growth group leader. I'm a community group leader. But I love welcoming. And so I can easily do that on the weekend because that fills me. Now, I don't personally. I'm an introvert. But for some people, it's like, oh, well, I just want to walk around and welcome people. And so that doesn't even feel like a ministry to them. But they do one as a leader and they do one as on a team. You know, there are complexities there. And if I hedge my bets enough ways so that everyone's happy? I don't know if that made it clear, but yeah. Okay, empowering. So we talked about how a good leader takes full responsibility for everything under their care, own it. But the key to good leadership is sharing that responsibility and authority with others and not hoarding it for ourselves. Now, it is possible to hoard for a few reasons, and some can be very deep-seated needs to, I want to look the best, I want to look like the person who everyone, I want to be the person everyone comes to, I want to be. But more and more, we need to mobilise, empower, equip others for significant ministries, which has a massive multiplying effect. Delegation is another word for this, but I don't like it as much. Delegate feels a little, not quite as warm, and empowering's positive, I think. A central piece in empowering others, though, is that the leader retains full responsibility while sharing that responsibility. So it's not like money. I've got $5, and now it's yours, and it's no longer mine. That's not a good empowering. It's more like a virus. I've got it, a good virus. I've passed it on to you, you've got it, you pass it on to others. I feel the responsibility, you feel the responsibility, next person feels the responsibility. And so what it means is that there's full ownership all the way down, which is a very powerful environment. Some people treat delegation like it's something that you just give away. They sort of dump it and run, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But rather, good empowering looks like that keeping and passing on. I think I've said all that. So the leader's role becomes to, talked about it a bit, create an environment of safety for those under them, but also an environment in which they can do the ministry, be empowered and equipped and trained in order to do the work. And so the leader's role, they don't suddenly, I've got nothing to do, but it actually, they shift in their value system and thinking. So one of the interesting things is, this is true of any organisation, also true of church, is down here you've got your team members, and you've got team leaders, then you've got coaches. Now, do you have coaches just in the community group world or also in the team ministry team world? Just in the yep, cool. And then what do you call these guys? Department heads, leaders, and then you have church leaders. So generally, a church will look something like that, which is just a hierarchy that most organisations have. But they do different things. So church leaders, I'll start down here. Team members lead themselves. Team leaders lead others. Coaches lead leaders. Department leaders lead ministry. And heads of churches lead the church or an organisation. And so what actually happens at each level is a shift in mindset, is a shift in values. You know, what's important to me actually has to change. And people find it disconcerting and difficult to move to the next tier because there's a fundamental value shift that actually has to take place. I'm doing different things. Some things that are the same, but I, ultimately I'm doing different things at the different levels. And unless I can change my values to recognize that and own that and enjoy that, it becomes hard to remain at that tier. And not everyone will be gifted at every tier. And no tier is better. It's just different giftings and competencies. But you will have experienced it yourself that here I was just leading myself to be engaged in the work of ministry and serving, but now I actually have responsibility to lead others. And what I need to value more than doing the ministry is helping others do the ministry and equipping and empowering others to do the ministry. And then I become a coach, and over time, as scale grows, you'll probably want coaches over the ministry team's area of church life as well. Now what I really value and spend my time doing is working at how do you lead leaders, which is a fundamentally different skill, overlapping, but different skill than just leading a team, because you're trying to help team leaders lead others. Yeah, so it sort of makes sense. And I forget where I was going with it, but I think it's the value shift idea. So you start to see yourself as, I provide the umbrella of protection, and the primary thing that I am doing now is I'm a leader of others, not doing the ministry. And so I work on this area of ministry rather than in the area of ministry. I work on empowering, equipping, training, providing a team environment that is conducive to that sort of thing. I'm the umbrella. There's a great book called The Umbrella Man. It's just this sort of concept. The carport that keeps off the rain and the sun and the under which you can play with your car, whatever you do in your carport. That's the leader providing that protective and safe environment, which will include things like a supportive culture, opportunities to try new things, scope to fail, support, training, feedback, trust. They're the sort of things you want to see on your teams, those sort of things. In this empowerment, people who are empowered feel they can grow and serve and achieve and develop. Now, it'd be good for you to think about your experiences in all sorts of spheres of life where you've had positive and negative experiences of being empowered by others, being on a team where you felt empowered or being on a team where you felt disempowered, because you learn a lot from just thinking about those experiences. Thoughts or questions? I'll dig in now into some of the key failures in empowering, which will resonate with lots of us, I think. Excellent. Yeah. Just got to do it. there's a real reality that as soon as you give responsibility to someone else, delegate, empower, whatever you call it, it's going to slow things down and it's going to drop quality. That is the nature of empowering, except in very, very rare circumstances. They're not going to do it as well as you for at least a period of time. Now, hopefully, eventually they do, and hopefully, eventually, numbers of them do, and so you've actually multiplied the work rather than it being bottlenecking in us, which is a tendency. We let things bottleneck in us all the time at every tier. And so I think one of the things that helps is I recognise that that's going to be the case, and I make a conscious decision that I'm going to allow that to be the case. And all that perfectionism in me is going to cry out, but I'm going to fight against it so that can happen. And it's going to make things slower. I think it's the same sort of point. Drop in quality, drop in speed for a period of time. But it's crucial to training. It's crucial to multiplying the work and training others. So I'm willing to do it. It's good. Yes. Totally. Yeah. It's not just I've given it to you and it sucks and, well, what can I do? What can I do? I'm just empowering. Yeah, you empower in such a way that part of the environment that you've created is a feedback and training and support and constant helping that person grow. So hopefully that ratchets things up faster. And that's why you got to meet. Yeah, yep. Whether it be one-to-one or whether it be pulling together those meetings, a team meeting, yep. That's right. And that becomes your life as the leader. That becomes your life. Another significant thing to work out is 60 to 70% of what leaders do at the different levels is the same. So often when we think of, I'll talk more about this in training, but often when we think about training others, we're thinking about, I've got to train them to do the sound desk, you know, the technical stuff with the sound desk. Or I've got to train them to how do you actually welcome a new person. Now you have to do all those things. They're really important. They're specific competencies, specific skills for the specific ministries. But 60 to 70% of what any leader needs to know is common across everyone, which is why we're doing this together today. And it's the same at any tier. There are different things. There are overlapping things, but there are also different things to learn at each tier. But at the tier, there's a real... I'm not sure why I was saying that. I'm losing my mind. I'm not sure if this is where you're going. But we don't want our competency and our character and conviction to get out of sync. We want our discipleship and our leadership to always work side by side and grow side by side. It'd be a terrible thing if we grew to be very efficient, competent leaders who didn't really love Jesus that much and display his character. Yeah, that's right. That's good. In fact, I'd prefer people who love the Lord and are seeking to obey him who actually aren't that competent for ministry. Now, I don't think we have to choose, but we've built from the bottom. You often build from both ends, right? I think. I'll give a brain dump and see if this makes any sense. You often think, well, how do you build? Well, you get the church planner in place and the church planner starts building. Who does he bring in? Well, he brings in team members who he eventually raises up to team leaders, which is, so you don't have this middle tier, these two, for a while. And so you keep working on that and then you try to fill it in. And this, I think, is the last tier to build. So you can actually have a collapsible structure where Toby comes and then he eventually hires a staff member or a couple of staff members. But their big job, hopefully, is here. It's building team leaders who are helping team members be engaged in the work of ministry. But over time, you realise you've got to scale it because there's so many team leaders and there's so many community group leaders that there's no possible way that these guys up here are actually able to meet with them, give intelligible feedback, have any sort of quality at all. So how do you do it? Well, you just got to put in middle management, don't you? So you think, let's have in coaches. Firstly, we went into the, exactly what you've done, went into the growth group area and we put coaches in place. And then we moved on and have placed coaches in place in the ministry teams world as well. Now, what we've found over time is we set up the M's and so lots of training has been going on by the M's individually, particularly skill-based training. What's a lot harder to then do is bring everyone back together for core competencies training because everyone thinks, oh, I've got training, baby. Don't you tell me that I need to do, because everyone thinks they're doing it really well. So, and that's siloing that every organisation needs to watch. Breaking into different departments where their department thinks I've got the whole lot. So that's a little bit of the picture. The ministry M particularly is concerned about, it's different than the other M's. It doesn't have lots of teams. It influences all the other M's in terms of training. So the ministry M is trying to build lots of this sort of training in. We include MTS and things like that in there. I'm not sure if that helps, but there's lots of facets to church growth. It's not merely leadership and that sort of thing. One of the wonderful things about the M's is they're trying to represent the key purposes that God has for his church, and if they're all functioning well, the whole church functions healthily, and that's, they're all engine rooms for church growth. You know, what is it at Grace Church? Well, you could think, oh, it's the missionary, because that's the one that reaches people. But you'll never do that unless your growth group ministry is functioning really strong and you're maturing and growing disciples. Because the disciples will get mission-minded, will give, will serve, will... So it's an engine room that drives church growth. And you've actually got to start growth groups, community groups, in order to drive church growth, not just when people, new people come, because it actually is an engine room. Magnification, apart from the fact that we just want to adore and love and worship God, if church sucks, you know, if people come in and the music is terrible and the experience of church is terrible, church doesn't grow. So churches are a complex organism, but I think the M's all really help to give a whole healthy church life experience, which then helps it move forward and grow. I'm a little off track. But I don't know if that was helpful. Yeah. Yep.
I'm finding this really helpful, particularly by talking about helping leads.
That's very good. It's very good. I think one of the things is scale. So if I had a family of 12 kids, I'd be far more structured than I am now. You just have to be. Who's doing what? I'd have charts. I'd have this. We'd be buying in bulk. We'd be, you know, line of sandwiches at the table. Like I don't know how you'd be doing it. Like, but we'd get organised. Like, I think one of the things that people, when they think, yes, church is family, definitely church is family, but then they think my small family with my two kids. You know, like, whereas we're a large family, and the larger the family gets, the more challenging it gets. Like EVs, I don't know, about 3,000, something like that. It's about which is a drop in the bucket, which is so small. You know, that seems like a very large church in the Australian evangelical context. There are 330,000 people on the coast, and the vast majority are going to hell. You know, we are so tiny. Anyway, that's a bit of a rant. But when you get to that scale, you realise there's lots of organisation and communication and things that need to take place to function well as a family. And we need to start other churches, and we need to, like, there's lots that needs to be done. But you're right in that we need to watch family culture. Because my real worry is you start talking too much like this, and we've had the M's lots in the background actually at our church, because I don't want that to be the headline. I want the headline to be making, you know, deep disciples in ever increasing. I want God and the gospel and Jesus. I want that to be the headline. So you're right. We want to keep watching the culture and being careful that we don't import so much business think that it becomes like a business. But there's all sorts of brilliant things going on in organisations around the world. Wouldn't it be a silly thing to not take that wisdom and apply it into the church context, but sensitively, carefully, so that it still feels like a family? And I reckon at the team level, it is actually one of the places where you get some of the best family experience. You get a little bit organised, you pull the team together, you organise an agenda. Now, you may not pass out the agenda, so it doesn't feel like a business meeting, you know. But you've got in your mind the flow of how things are going to go. But the very fact that you get together and you eat and you have some fun and you tell some stupid stories and then you do some ministry together, that's very powerful. If every person was in a community group and enjoyed getting together around the word and making friends and then they had another group of people in church life who they went and they actually did something real that counted for the kingdom with people they enjoyed being with, and that's a pretty powerful family experience. And if everyone had that, they'd feel like this is home. Now, it doesn't always work like that, does it? But that's my sort of dream. Now, I'm not sure if that answered your question, but I think that tension is a right one to feel. Excellent. And that's worth really spending some time. That's the fundamental difference between when you go to work and you lead people and when you come to church and lead people is they're volunteers. There's very few extrinsic motivations involved. Yeah? Most of the motivations are intrinsic motivations. Now, that's in your work life as well. You'll find extrinsic motivation only gets you so far. You know, if your job sucks, there's only so much they can pay you and so many perks they can give you before you're actually out of there. But church life, it's almost entirely intrinsic. Am I getting the words right? Yeah, it's almost entirely, and so it's challenging. I think it means that there's always a feeling in church leadership, wherever you are, and I feel it. In fact, it's probably one of my highest stresses, is it always feels like it could fall apart at any moment. Because with physical eyes, it's just held together with sticky tape. You know, it's just a bunch of people who said, "I'm in. I'm happy to serve." But with spiritual eyes, God by His Holy Spirit is working through people, stirring their hearts so they want to be engaged in the mission, so they're captured by things of eternal value and not just of this life. And so I think we need to keep fueling that. I mean, how do you fuel that? I think the preaching is absolutely essential. Church every week is a vision session. It's God's vision through His word to us. And so if church is done well, then hopefully people are feeling like, yes, I can see the eternal realities again. I can see the invisible realities again. Because life, the Christian life, is lived by faith and not by sight. You know, if you just look at the world around, it looks very different than looking through the lens of the Scriptures. As we look with the eyes of the gospel, trusting the word of God, we're looking by faith. And we actually see the world the way it is. So we need preaching that keeps helping us see the invisible, see eternity. And the more that we see that, the more our people are going to be like, yes, I've got to give my life to that. Massaging in all my other priorities and how I work that through my other, yeah, my Christian life into my workplace, my Christian life into all my other, my family life, my... but also it'll mean as the vision trickles down at the different levels and as we even have the little chats individually with people, it's those just encouraging words that keep pushing people on and helping them to see why we're engaged in the work that we're engaged in that helps. But yes, there'll be greater fluidity and greater feeling of, oh, I'm not sure if my whole team's about to quit. then... when you've got them tied to the, you know, you've got them leashed with the paycheck to some degree. Yeah, it's a lot harder for people to leave their job when they've got some secure paycheck coming in. Yeah. But we've also got to be willing to let people, volunteers, like, we will regularly have team members want to leave our teams. Now, what do you do at that point? Well, I do want to try as the team leader to have conversations with them in a way that keeps... reminding them of what God's doing in the world, what we're seeking to achieve, how what you're doing fits into that. It's really important. Encourage them, all those sort of things. So nudge them to, can you keep going? Can you serve elsewhere? Can you? But you also got to let people go, man, my life's blown up. This has gone on. I need a change. I don't fit here. I don't, because we've got to let people make their own decisions and while at the same time helping them to think maturely about the decisions they make. Any more? Yes, like they're part of it, like they're actually shaping it, like they own it. That's great. And often relationally they feel much more connected. So leaving is actually stepping out of a group of relationships rather than just I'm flicking a job that I, yeah, a task. All right, three, that's very helpful, thanks everyone. Three failures in empowering. It's worth recognising that a lot of failures in empowering have to do with, require some self-reflection to work out why, if it's happening to us. But here are the three big ones that I see around the place. There's probably more, but three big ones. Micromanagement. So this is a failure to give authority to the other person. So we've made them responsible, but we haven't actually really given them away the authority without our interference. So instead, we may try to control the details that they're working on, or we constantly check that they've done the things that they've committed to do, or we come in and change what they've done after the person has completed the task. I've seen someone set up all these chairs and get something ready for an event, and then the team leader who was over them came in and they rearranged all the chairs. Now, there can be a good reason for that, but generally, that's a very disempowering thing to do. And I'm sure we've all been on the receiving end of micromanagement somewhere, so I probably don't need to say much more than this. But it is worth thinking, do I micromanage? And perfectionism can be a the energy of the enemy of empowering fully, because we perfectionists like to micromanage our, others, because we don't want to give up control. Two, this is the opposite. Dump it and run. Dumping and running is the opposite. This is the failure to keep responsibility ourselves. We just give it away, and we think we give it away so fully that we don't even think about it again. We basically dumped the role, the task, the responsibility on the other person, and we forget about it. Now, that's harmful, because it severs the relationship between the leader and those being led. It reduces opportunity, reduces protection, support, it reduces the opportunity for training, teamwork, equipping, all those sort of things. So particularly harmful. And what often happens is the people who've had it dumped upon them will often drown. So it's sometimes not. Some people will have stuff dumped upon them and they'll actually swim. And you think they should probably be leading the team. But other people, it'll crush them. Third, and this is actually a subset of micromanagement, but I think it's worth its own category, is cutting the nerve by stepping in. So often the things we've delegated to other people aren't going the way that we'd like. They aren't as good as we'd like. They're going to fail. They're not going to happen at all. And at this point, you've got a choice to make. What do? Do I step in and save it, or do I let it fail? Now, there's pros and cons, isn't there? And you've got to weigh up what the thing is. One of the things that leaders often do is they jump in to fix it or save it or not let it fail. When we do this, we risk cutting the nerve of responsibility. Because if you've given me something to do and I don't do it, but then you jump in and you fix it, what do I learn from that? I learn he's always going to jump in and fix it. She's always going to save the day. I don't actually really have responsibility here. Doesn't matter whether I do it or not, because they're the one who carries the real responsibility here. It says, don't bother about taking responsibility in the future. Whereas, if you let it fail, the person feels the weight of failure, of not doing what they said they'd do. Now, you've got to weigh out what it is. There's going to be no church tonight because the person didn't do, There's no sound because the sound guy didn't come, didn't organise anyone else to come, that's fairly significant. Do you just let that fail and work on without sound in church tonight? What do you do?
Probably not.
But there are other things that you might let fail. Now, you might work out different ways to step in an appropriate way. So if it's going to fail and cause massive amounts of problems, you can come in alongside the person and work out, well, what can we do here together? So you try to help them retain responsibility and be involved in somehow fixing the situation so that you're not taking responsibility off them. Help them feel the weight of it, but bring support to help them complete the role or responsibility. Now, that might seem harsh, but I just think that's very, very important, because every time you step in, you're cutting that nerve, and I don't feel responsible anymore. It's all gone numb. And so, what are some of the reasons we don't empower others or fail in these three ways? Well, we don't trust others. That can be a real problem for a leader. We think we can do it better, which I think I've mentioned, often linked to being a perfectionist. We don't want to give up control. When you entrust responsibility to someone else, there's a much greater risk of it going bad. And so one of the fundamental things you need to do as a leader is, I'm going to embrace the uncertainty of having the possibility of things failing rather than keeping control myself. And we've talked about how it slows things down, but we need to embrace it. Yes, it's good. Yeah, you've just got to work out what that something is. So sometimes the something is it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. I should step in earlier and and do something. So there's a timing issue. Do I do it now? Do I do it later? When do I do it? You've got to work out what's right there. But the other choice is how do I do this in such a way that while I remain fully responsible and I'm watching this situation and planning how I'm going to fix it, I'm also trying to help them remain fully responsible. So my solution will somehow include them. And it might be it will include them in bringing feedback, bringing encouragement, giving them time to work it through, but it's going downhill. It might include coming alongside them in such a way, can I help you to fix this? It might actually include, this isn't really working out. These are the things I've seen. What do you think about those? An opportunity to help them grow and perhaps to move them into another ministry area or out of that responsibility level for a time. So I don't think the decision's necessarily easy to know exactly what to do in every circumstance, but your point is exactly right. You retain responsibility and are watching the situation and making choices even while you try to help them retain responsibility, fully empowered, and help them to make real choices.
Brandon, yeah. The level of delegation you're at, maybe
back-stepping. Yeah, it's good. Has anyone seen Blanchard's situational leadership stuff? I can't remember exactly how it's basically a quadrant thing like this, and you move through the quadrants in that direction. I don't know why it's that direction. Yep, do you want to do it? L1, L2, L3, L4.
I'm just going to write what I know.
Yeah, good.
I've got to do something different, right? I'm just going to go, I do, you watch, we do. You do, I watch, you do,
I don't watch,
report later, and so you go like that.
Yeah, it's good. It's pretty similar, slightly different. That's very helpful, yeah. People take different levels of responsibility from when they start a role to when they're fully, going hammer and tongs in the role. And the way that we lead will change depending on where the person is at. So when people first come in, you're modelling for them, you're showing them how the role's done, you're getting them ready up to speed. You then get to the point where I guess you're doing it together, or they're doing it in such a way that you're coaching them very closely is how I've normally framed it up. Then they're doing it fairly independently, but you're watching and giving feedback. Eventually, they're you. They can do it as well as you do it. All you need is reports from time to time about what's going on, because you fully trust them. They're totally empowered for their role. So that's particularly helpful. And it might be that trying to work out what to do, I think this is Toby's point, is you step them back. One of the points in the delegation cycle because it could be they're failing because we're treating them like that, whereas they're really needing a lot of coaching. So that's the other possibility, is in our leadership we've failed to recognise where they're at and we're treating them beyond their delegation level.